Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Box to make this beat.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Pace Labs podcast. We are here on a Monday afternoon recording this show for a race that was 2 days ago. It was supposed to be yesterday, and in a chain of events at about, I think it was like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, I think it was about 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, they decided to move the Clash to that night, to Saturday night, and then all of a sudden we got a race that is happening in about 4 or 5 hours from that announcement. So that was definitely very strange how that happened, and I'd seen something. I think that's just it's been a long time since something like that has happened, since a race has been moved to the previous day. Like, we know how much it rains, we know how much races are moved back, and that was going to be the case with how the weather was scheduled for the weekend, but they ended up moving it the day before. I think, a great decision to get the race in, but the way that I see it and the way I look at that announcement, and I understand the circumstance. I understand that there wasn't going to be much fans there anyways on Saturday. But, you know, I look at this as kind of the last straw, the last dance for the LA Clash, which I think, you know, an event that was successful, an event that had, you know, a few strong years, especially when it kicked off. I think last year was strong as well. This year you can't really tell. But even this year I just didn't see it having the same, the same hype as it did in previous years. And I look at this and I look at the street course. I look at these two races as races we can take to the people. And I like that the phrase that NASCAR used is kind of, they used it more for the street course race, saying, hey, this is a race where we can do, you know, in places that aren't Chicago. We can do, you know, we can do this in any city around the world, not just around the country, around the world, and make this work. We can do the same for the Clash. We can do the same for a stadium race because we've seen it be able to work out. Now, there's different stadiums with different sizes, logistics. I get that. The LA Coliseum's a little bit different the way it's laid out than most football stadiums. But I think regardless of that fact, it's something that we still can make work. We could take it to Dallas. You know, we could do it here in, you know, Tampa. We could do it in Chicago. We could do it in any, you know, most in every football stadium in America and even around the world, and make it work in some capacity. So the only way I would see that continuing is something that would move around to different cities. But other than that, I think the LA Coliseum is probably seen as last year as the Clash. You know, what could we see a total swing of things and they make it a points race? You never know. I really wouldn't even mind that, but I also do really see this kind of being a thing where, yeah, I think it's the last time that we see the LA Clash ran, at least, you know, for the time being. Like, could they always come back? You know, definitely think they could, but for now, I think that'll probably be the last dance there at the LA Coliseum. But more so, let's move on to kind of how the race went. The events that we saw during the race. So they basically had to change the format. There were no more heat races, no more LCQ, which I really think is the best part of the weekend. A lot of people would agree. Everyone fighting and vying for spots, just slamming into each other, which is the product of racing we see at this track every year. But I go in and look at practice. It basically was they had the practice sessions and then they had the qualifying session. And so they had practice qualifying to decide the starting lineup for the race, but not just that starting lineup, the top 23 that would qualify for the race. So it was top 22 on time, and then 23 would be a provisional, which is basically the highest in points from the previous year. So practice, how it looked, you know, It's really hard to tell. It's LA Clash. It's a football stadium. You're never going to see any track like this on the rest of the schedule. So it's really hard to see. Like, you can't sit here and overreact and say, okay, this person has speed, this person doesn't. But there definitely are some surprises that you will see across the board that maybe didn't qualify in that top 23. One of them being Ryan Blaney. He qualified 26th, but he got that provisional being the champion, so he was able to start last. But in the race, he ended up finishing third, right? So practice is going to be really, you know, group qualifying, group practice was definitely not the most ideal way. Just with a track that small, it's hard. But, you know, you look at other guys like Christopher Bell, 33rd on the times. He did not qualify in. Chris Buescher, 30th. He, you know, also did not qualify, had a strong year last year, but, you know, like I said, can't really take a lot of this away for the rest of the season, but definitely some good surprises, some guys that could kind of come away from this race with hope. You got guys that qualified themselves into the race. Justin Haley qualified top 10 in the 51 Rick Ware Racing Ford, and he ran top 10 majority of the race, did a wonderful job. You look at Noah Gregson, who qualified top 20, was able to do decent during the race as well. Good for him. Josh Williams was just one spot away from qualifying into the race. He was 23rd in the number 16. Going to be great to see what he does in that cup car this year. You kind of look across the board, and that's pretty much it as far as for good surprises. I mean, you did have both front row cars qualifying into the race. That is great to see. And then we get to the race. Your top contenders were pretty much Ty Gibbs, Joey Logano, I'd say, were the guys that led the most during the race, Denny Hamlin as well. Ty Gibbs really saw an unfortunate ending to that race as he was pulling away, and then those late race restarts, everybody's just banging on each other, and he ends up spinning around, finishes 18th. Joey Logano was, you know, one of the guys that they collided a lot during that race. We'll get to that in a second. He finished 4th, but the ultimate winner of the race was Denny Hamlin. Escapes on that late restart, and he is able to take the lead, take the victory, and his first LA Clash. And I saw a stat, he's the first person to win the Budweiser Shootout, the Sprint Unlimited, and the LA Clash, in his career. So definitely a great accolade for Denny Hamlin, a guy that's always been great, obviously, at Daytona, where it was before, and now being able to go to LA somewhere, which is a big market, and get that victory and potentially the last LA Clash. Definitely great for him. Kyle Busch finished 2nd. He's been great in this LA Clash every year, whether he was with Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, the first year where he finished, I believe he was runner-up as well in that race. Yeah, he was, to Joey Logano. Third place, or I mean the second year when he was running the 8 car, you know, strong last year as well, strong this year also. Ryan Blaney, defending champion, made his way all the way through the field from 23rd to 3rd. To finish in that last podium spot. So, you know, definitely a race where, you know, you can overreact, you can underreact, you know, guys can really come out of it with good momentum, but also the guys that maybe didn't qualify into as well, they're not, you know, beating themselves up so much about it, you know, just because of the fact that it's an exhibition race and it's the type of track that we're not going to see on the schedule for the rest of the year. So, now, let's kind of talk about that rivalry that we saw. Ty Gibbs, Joey Logano had a disagreement. They came together on majority of restarts like everybody else in the field did. But when you're battling for the lead, it definitely has some more implications, some more, you know, tempers can flare a little bit more than they would if you're battling for 15th place. So Joey Logano was put kind of up into the wall. He didn't appreciate that, and neither of them came away with the victory. Ty Gibbs actually, you know, like I mentioned, got spun out and finished 18th, but Joey Logano went up to him after the race and just, you know, it wasn't exactly, you know, clarified exactly what was said, but, you know, he was upset, and Gibbs said, hey, you ran me up too, and Joey Logano just kind of walked away saying, hey, I'll remember that. These are two guys that, you know, there's two factors here. There's two guys that already last year in Ty Gibbs' rookie year had history. They had run-ins, most notably at Martinsville to end the season, and then obviously just Joe Gibbs Racing and their history with Joey Logano and Penske Racing in general. It's always been a feud that has been long-lasting for over a decade now, let's be honest. And so now Joey Logano feuding with, you know, the T-Motors grandson is definitely just poetry kind of writing itself. You know, it was something that you would assume would just be bound to happen. So we'll see how that feud kind of plays out this year. You know, Kyle Busch, you know, kind of almost was in the middle of that you know, mumbo jumbo going on during the race, you know, and he's now racing for Chevrolet. So could that be a three winged feud? You never know. But definitely, you know, it had an entertaining finish. You know, circumstance wasn't ideal, but I think for NASCAR to come up with all that, get it done a day before, and, you know, get everybody out by Saturday night or Sunday morning, compares to if, you know, we tried to run it on Sunday, it probably could have been days and days delayed. So, you know, now coming out of the clash, the discussion really right now, and we got a few topics to hit on this show, not a ton, but a few as we kind of go into Super Bowl weekend. We'll have an off weekend for NASCAR. But, you know, one of the topics, you know, really was where the clash will end up, you know, after this year. And, you know, we've already just had the discussion, okay, will it return to LA? We don't think it will. You never know. You know, never say never. It could go back, you know, if certain things align. But the belief is just that it probably won't. So, you know, where do you take the clash? You know, the first thing people say is, okay, do you move it back to Daytona? But what was the reason we moved it from there, right? Wreckfests, you know, another super speedway race. And now, especially being that, you know, for some odd, unfortunate, you know, unknown reason, NASCAR has moved Atlanta to the second race of the season to have two straight super speedway races to start the year. You know, three super speedway races and four, I guess, if you include the duels, is just something that, you know, people probably aren't too interested in. Now, if we didn't have Atlanta, I would look at that and somewhat consider it, but I would want to do something different. I've always said, you put like five cars in a pack at a super speedway, you know, you could have some pretty fun racing. Like, I was like, let's just do some heat races, you know, at Daytona and see how that goes, you know. But even with that, if you moved it back to Daytona, a lot of people would say road course, but do people want to see road course kick off the year? I don't know. The short track concept is kind of cool. But I also think the concept of just being in Daytona is really, really cool. And I understand what they've done for the clash and how much of a money grab it is. But honestly, now just thinking about it, spending the first part of the year in South Beach, I feel like at this point, you know, if you want to do something that seems more natural, if nothing can come up, if you can't take it to another stadium race, which I think, right, you could. We could just move it from LA. We could go to Dallas. We could even go to Charlotte, you know. you know, we can go to Tampa. We can go to Orlando. We can go to Jacksonville, Chicago. You can go to Seattle. You can go anywhere for that kind of race. What if, you know, we could do a short track in North Carolina? You kick off the season with Rockingham. You know, Rockingham is the clash. North Wilkesboro is the all-star race. Would kind of be a nice little tandem there for exhibition races. Or if we want it down in Daytona, what if we just had the new Smyrna? I mean, I understand it's not the fan grab, the attendance grab, but at the same time, hey, we've heard of temporary seating before. You know, what if you throw it in New Smyrna and you're kind of in Daytona Beach for the week, you know? But this also would have to be a discussion of, okay, NASCAR is not going to be on Super Bowl weekend, but we've been continuing to try and move up, you know, the start of the year. So that's why we've seen, you know, the clash and then a week off, which is Super Bowl, and then Daytona 500. So that would have to be something that would probably be after the Super Bowl for sure. You know, but I think it's something definitely worth considering. I've seen a lot of people mention the kind of those types of short tracks and maybe doing it there, but I'm really not opposed to doing it in another football stadium. I think the concept itself has worked. It's been cool. You know, it's brought in new viewers, and I think the ability to be able to say, hey, let's take NASCAR to you, you know, and let's take NASCAR to your city, I think is definitely really cool. And so to find maybe a landmark kind of city to go there for and do it again in a football stadium, and then that could kind of be the clash's identity, could definitely be something I would consider for sure. But the clash is over and done. Those conversations will be for when the season is about to start, and we're going into Daytona. We're going into Speed Weeks. We got a week off here, the Super Bowl, so we won't dive too much into it because we don't know every single entry list yet either. So the next time we record, we'll have every entry list, and we'll be able to look at them in detail. But for right now, we do have one entry list. We have the ARCA entry list, which is 50 entries, I think, which is absolutely incredible. I think it's certainly the most in a very long time that we have seen you know, in the ARCA race at Daytona. I think 43 cars, I'm pretty sure, are what is accepted. But you look at this entry list up and down, there is, I mean, certainly a, you know, a very long list of drivers and teams in this race, and kind of the notable drivers you want to look up and down. As we go down, the first one we kind of see, we know, you know, for those of you in the ARCA Loop, Venturini Motorsports kind of has a brand new look for their team this year. They have Amber Balkan, Tony Bradinger, and Chris Wright as their full-time drivers, so it's going to be interesting to see if they can grab another trophy this year. Marco Andretti will be driving at Daytona. He'll be driving for Bruce Cook and that team in the number 17. It was announced he'd have kind of a partial schedule in trucks and ARCA this year, so that's going to be cool for him to kind of get acclimated to stock car racing, kind of having like a Shane Van Gisbergen type of year. As more and more drivers, you know, continue to make the jump over here to stock car racing. And, you know, on the topic of Shane Van Gisbergen, he'll be racing for Pinnacle Motorsports. So he'll be driving that number 28, you know, to get that approval for Daytona, which I think will be really cool. You know, he raced the ARCA test. Now he's going to be racing the ARCA race and then running the Xfinity race on that same day. So it's kind of that thing where it's like he needs to race that for the approval for the Xfinity race on the same day. But, you know, would assume all goes well and he will be okay. Defending winner Greg Van Alst is going to be back in the race, so that's going to be cool to see. You know, he'll be driving his number 35 that he wheeled to victory lane last year. Gus Dean's back racing for Venturini as well. So that'll be also cool to see. And then as we kind of keep scrolling down here, our good buddy Caleb Costner is back in that number 93, running the full ARCA schedule this year. And then Patrick Emmerling's down there running in a Ford in the number 08. There's some drivers that haven't been announced. But either way, it's about 50 cars that we're going to see for the ARCA race in Daytona. Some could withdraw, some more could enter. That's going to be really interesting to see. And that is on Saturday. The first race of Saturday, right before the Xfinity Series race, which then takes place that same day at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern, going from the daytime into the night for the Xfinity Series race. So that's going to be cool to see. So the first kind of official entry list for Speed Weeks has been dropped, and now I dropped something on my Instagram just a little bit earlier for you guys to throw in some questions. I know you guys didn't have a ton of time to throw in questions because I kind of posted it like 30 minutes ago, but I'll see kind of what we have in here so far. So the first one I kind of see is Daytona 500 picks. So some early Daytona 500 picks. What could we do with that here? I would say you look at our entry list here. We can kind of just briefly go over it a little bit, who we'll have. Obviously, last podcast we went over the driver changes. Now we can kind of look at the open entries that we'll have. We know Kaz Grallo will be in the 36. We know NRI Racing is trying to enter that 44. Don't know who the driver would be if they do. David Reagan will be in that RFK number 60, continuing his streak of running, you know, every Daytona 500 after he's retired. But he's done pretty well in them, so he's had a good streak going. I know he ran well last year as well. Anthony Alfredo in the 62 for Beard Motorsports. BJ McLeod in the 78 for Live Fast. Obviously, they sold their charter, so now an open entry for them. And the 84 of Jimmy Johnson for Legacy Motor Club. So I look at this list. Do I see anybody in that open entries that'll probably win? No. If I had to pick one out of the open entries to probably do the best, I would say David Reagan, just because of his history, his success. You know, another easy pick would be Jimmy Johnson as well. But if I'm going to go Daytona 500 pick this year, who am I looking at to start off the year with a bang? You know what? Let's go somebody like the 23 of Bubba Wallace. I think this has got to be his year. He's finished runner-up multiple times in this event, and I think this could be the year he finally gets it done. Starts off the year with a bang. Doesn't have to worry the rest of the year about making the playoffs. He gets that victory. Someone else I could also watch, something else that would be crazy, but also possible with the speed that we saw in the LA Clash, somebody like Justin Haley. What if somebody like Justin Haley comes out here in that chartered 51 car, gets the win, and Rick Ware Racing gets themselves a playoff spot in the Daytona 500? Would be incredible. Now, guys, I could see repeating in the Daytona 500. Former winners, Ricky Stenhouse, could for sure get, seeing him go back-to-back would be crazy to see. But if anyone's going to do it, he could definitely do it. Denny Hamlin, obviously, is always going to be a contender. You look at guys like, hey, even first-time winners that have been veterans in the sport for a while. Let's look at somebody like Brad Keselowski. Let's look at somebody like Kyle Busch, even Chase Elliott as well. You know, people I think that could definitely contend. But, you know, if I had to give my early race pick, I'm going to go with Bubba Wallace maybe getting that victory. So let's look up here. What rookie do you have your eyes on? I mean, I definitely have my eyes on all of them. But if I had to pick kind of an early candidate for rookie of the year, certainly be tough. But, you know, I love the traction that Spire Motorsports is going to have, right, with Zane Smith, with Carson Hocevar. But I do just got to look over and say Josh Berry is probably going to get rookie of the year this year at Stuart Haas Racing. And kind of like I said in the last show and on the radio last week, I don't see them being an ultimate contender. I really don't see them making the playoffs. You never know with him, Rodney Childers, maybe it could be a match made in heaven and they could really pull something off, but I don't see it happening this early, especially with a new Ford car, new partnership, Josh Berry going over from Chevy to Ford. I still think of this being as a long transition because obviously they're investing in him as their guy, just like they are with Chase Briscoe. And I think Josh Berry is set to be with the program for a long time, but I don't think it'll all start this year. I don't think they'll rush it. I don't think they'll make the playoffs, but I still do think that they, you know, have a great shot at getting rookie of the year for sure. Let's go. Who will be this year's biggest disappointment / surprise? That's a good one. So who do I think will be the biggest surprise this year, and who do I think will be the biggest disappointment? So let's start with the disappointment, because I would assume this means somebody that, you know, maybe people are thinking are going to be really good or at least expecting to be good this year, and then they end up not being good. I'm going to look, you know, I'm looking up and down the board here. You know, I look at someone like Austin Dillon, who I would say, but I just don't think the expectations are there. I maybe would go with Alex Bowman or maybe even Daniel Suarez. Honestly, I'm going to go with Daniel Suarez because, you know, and that wasn't a shot at Alex Bowman at all. I just think they really do need to get it together over there at the 48 to reach the 48 standards. But let's go with Daniel Suarez here, because as much as we love Daniel Suarez and as talented as we know he is, bringing somebody like Ross Chastain in there that has the ability to be feisty, has the ability to run consistent and run well and get checkered flags, is only going to push Daniel Suarez to do more, but also put pressure on him in that seat. And I know Trackhouse, it would take a lot to get him out of that program, but let's look at the guys that are behind him. You know, you look at Zane Smith, who's been signed on a Trackhouse contract. We understand he is racing with Spire right now on a third charter. He could probably stay there as long as he wants, but how long until he gets that Trackhouse seat, right? Somebody that's a former truck champion, somebody that has proven to get checkered flags, proven to run well. How long until he's in that seat? Fast forward, we look at Shane Van Gisbergen running full-time in the Xfinity Series this year. What if he lights it up? What if Shane Van Gisbergen goes in there and he lights it up? Doesn't just win on the road courses, but contends on the ovals too. He obviously wants to be full-time in the Cup Series at this point. He didn't make this big move from being a champion in supercars to come over here just to chillax. You know, he wants to be full-time in the premier level of the NASCAR Cup Series, and I think he's going to get there. Is he the guy that goes in for Daniel Suarez? If Trackhouse doesn't get, right, that third charter, what happens there? So Daniel Suarez, I think, is somebody that it's really complicated, but I think could really be on the hot seat if he doesn't perform, because I know how much Trackhouse loves checkered flags, and I know how much they love Daniel Suarez. But could it always be an opportunity where, like, they keep him in the program, they make an Xfinity Series program for Suarez, they switch him and Zane Smith or something like that? You never know what could happen there. And then on the flip side, Austin Dillon, like, it sounds very cliche, very normal to say, but we know why he wouldn't technically be on the hot seat, but still a lot of pressure because you have somebody like Kyle Busch that came in there, started winning races, making the playoffs. Where is that from Austin Dillon, right? He's been in the seat for almost a decade now. I believe it's been a decade. Where is this consistency in getting checkered flag? Where is that year where we can say this was the year of Austin Dillon? So I think there for sure. Now, surprises. I got two right here. Number one, we could start with somebody I already talked about this show, Justin Haley. Could 100% be a huge surprise to the NASCAR world for Rick Ware Racing, for them coming out there doing really well. in that 51 car. And then number two, I'm going to go with Todd Gilliland. He finally has got security this year. He's got that full-time job. He's alongside Michael McDowell, who got a win last year. Front Row Motorsports continues every single year in NASCAR to increase their resources, to increase their funding, to increase their speed. And you got a guy like Michael McDowell continuing there to perform. And you got a guy, a winner, a proven winner in Todd Gilliland in the Truck Series, who moved up to the Cup Series and didn't really have any bad gears. He's just been finding his footing, and that 38 team has been finding their footing, but I believe they have. They finally got their driver. Todd Gilliland is that guy, and I think he could have a wonderful year this year. I think he could almost be on par with Michael McDowell if he continues to progress, continues to improve, and that team continues to improve. I think they could really shock some people this year for sure. So Todd Gilliland, I could see being a big surprise in the Cup Series this year. I'm definitely very high on him as well. Let's look next here. Let's see if a NASCAR race was on a F1 track out of the United States, where would you want it to be? Ooh, that's a good question right there. You know, for the aesthetic wise, for view wise, just for how cool the racetrack is, I would say Abu Dhabi, just because that's a really, really sick looking track, and I feel like that would be fun to see NASCAR race on. But you know what? If I had to go somewhere where I feel like, you know, Monaco obviously would be really cool for NASCAR as well. But if I had to go somewhere as far as like the racing, I know we already race on Circuit of the Americas. We raced on the Canadian track before. That's a good question. Maybe Australia. Or maybe something like maybe the Silverstone Circuit could be cool as well. I'm trying to think of tracks that just I've enjoyed racing on, like an F1 games and simulator and things like that. You know, but I think those tracks could definitely be something that F1 could have a lot of fun, or NASCAR could have a lot of fun racing on those F1 tracks for sure. Or even the Las Vegas Street Course race. Let's do a doubleheader, you know, in Vegas and see how that goes. What are your thoughts on the NASCAR Mexico race? I would assume, yeah, just the NASCAR Mexico race that took place Saturday night. I think it was a good race. I think those cars raced really well. I think the cars that we see racing, you know, in the NASCAR Mexico series, the NASCAR Pinty series, and as well as the NASCAR Euro series, I think show a lot of great racing. Those cars are really cool, really dynamic in how they work and how they turn and how they operate. I think watching that short track race on Saturday night was a lot of fun to watch for sure. And I think, you know, to hopefully, you know, that puts the NASCAR Mexico series on the map a little bit more to do things like that, because the racing is definitely interesting. And it's the same way in the Pinty series as well. The Pinty series is very great. The Euro series is very great. And I think all definitely deserve a solid, you know, spotlight, you know, both of them. Let's look. Let's see what we got next. We have... What do you think DNQs in the 2024 Daytona 500? So back on that topic about our open cars, kind of picking, you know, I already went with two guys who I think could have a shot to do really well, to win, David Ragan, Jimmy Johnson. So I think both of them qualify. I think the odd man out here is probably just unfortunately going to be BJ McLeod. You know, we've seen the speed in the 36 of Kaz Grala, the 62 of Anthony Alfredo. You look at the guy that hasn't really ever had to race himself into the Daytona 500, being BJ McLeod, you know, as they've had that charter that they've been able to rely on, you know, for Live Fast Motorsports. So I am intrigued to see how BJ McLeod, how that team would take it as an open team needing to race their way in, right? Needing to really pick up track position and really do something instead of kind of riding around protecting your car. So I am intrigued to see how it goes, but I would need to see it before I believe it. So I think BJ McLeod and the 78 team, unfortunately, are probably the odd people out there. Weather forecast for Daytona. I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure what it is right now. I can look that up, as I always do going into Daytona weekend every single day to hope it doesn't rain. All week into next week, it looks like clear skies. A little chilly weather too, which might be nice as well. But looks like all clear skies for now. But as soon as NASCAR rolls in, you never know how it's going to go, because that could change in an instant. So that definitely for sure. But nonetheless, I think it's going to be a fun weekend at Daytona. Everybody certainly enjoy this week off. Enjoy the weekend off. Enjoy the Super Bowl. We got 49ers Chiefs. I think the Chiefs take that one. That's just my personal opinion. I think, you know, the way the Chiefs performed this year, I went going to the playoffs, and I'm like, it's the Chiefs. At the end of the day, I think they're going to find their way to get through. They're going to beat Miami. I did think Buffalo was going to win. I thought Buffalo had to beat Kansas City, but again, for like the 17 millionth time, Buffalo unfortunately fell in the playoffs. So that was unfortunate. I thought they were going to finish the story, but they did not. Chiefs ended up moving on. Chiefs continue to win. Chiefs beat the Ravens. And now I think they're going to get themselves a Super Bowl win again, you know, for a second year in a row, and kind of really just solidify this as the era of the Kansas City Chiefs. But Super Bowl will be this weekend. I think I'll try to be at Monster Jam that same day as well. Monster Jam's in my home city of Tampa, Florida. Be going to that. So kind of a final weekend before the NASCAR season officially starts, before I go to head to Daytona on Wednesday through Sunday. Going to be a lot of fun. And so I can't wait for that. So thank you all for tuning in. This little short mini episode of the podcast, LA Clash, was certainly fun. What will it be next year? We'll find out. But can't wait for Daytona. Everybody enjoy the week. Enjoy the weekend off. And I will talk to you guys next week.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.